Well, our text is Daniel chapter 3. Let me finish reading that chapter beginning at verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated, and he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace was overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast 3 men bound into the fire?" They answered to the king, "True, O king." And he answered and said, "But I see 4 men unbound and walking in the midst of the fire, and they're not hurt. And the appearance of the 4th is like the son of the gods." And Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace, and he declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out here and come here." And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the king's counselors gathered together and saw the fire had not had any power over the bodies of these men. The hair of their head was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own god. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, their houses laid in ruins, for there is no other god who is able to rescue in this way." Then king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. During his years as premier of the Soviet Union, Nikita Khrushchev denounced many of the policies of Joseph Stalin. Once, as he censured Stalin in a public meeting, he was interrupted by a shout from a heckler. He called out, "You were one of Stalin's colleagues. Why didn't you stop him? Who said that?" Khrushchev responded. An agonizing silence. Delayed, delayed. No one dared move a muscle. Then he said, "Now you know why." We can understand that kind of fear. The fear of the king, the fear of power. But what we have here in our text today is a confident boldness under that same kind of threat. That makes this text stand out. Maybe not in all of history, but certainly it stands out. Now, have you ever wondered, did Nebuchadnezzar get the idea for this huge statue from that dream he had back in chapter 2? I'm convinced of it. I couldn't prove it to you, but where else would you get this kind of idea? So the profession he made during Daniel's dealings with him previously, you know, when he interpreted the dream for him and everything else, he made this proclamation about Daniel's God then. But that did not deliver him from polytheism and an incredible arrogance. Instead, he makes this statue. And instead of just having the head of gold like he saw in his dream, he makes the whole thing of gold, 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. Now, for a little bit of perspective, the Statue of Liberty, for instance, now not counting the pedestal, but from the heel of Lady Liberty to her crown, not the torch, but the crown, that's 111 feet. So this is a little shorter than later Lady Liberty, but it's still a pretty imposing statue out there on the plain of Dura, which we don't know where it is. It's kind of assumed to be a few miles south of the primary city of Babylon. So the image is built and set up, and he calls for a dedication service at which all of his political officials were to come and worship the image. Now, this was a call not to the entire population, but to the officials. Look at verse 2. Satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, justices, magistrates, and then as though if that's not enough, then he says, and all the officials of the provinces were to come and worship the image that he had set up. Now, among those called were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The question is asked, where was Daniel? He's not mentioned in this chapter at all. Well, the assumption is that he was probably away on the king's business somewhere and not in town when this happened. Because what we know of him, he certainly would not have bowed down to this image. He would have been right there with his three friends. But anyway, most likely he was not in town. Now, bowing before images and idols was commonplace in Babylon, being an idolatrous and polytheistic culture. So for them, it was no big deal. Most likely, it was not considered a brand new god he was creating, but more of a bowing to the representation of Nebuchadnezzar and the state and that sort of thing. It was a worshiping of him and the kingdom and all of that kind of mixed up together. You would show your allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar and to Babylon by bowing down and worshiping him. Not to do so would be to withhold your allegiance. Ralph Davis, in his commentary, said this. Notice the, and you can hear some of Davis's wit and cleverness come out in this one. Notice the vicious verbs our writer uses. The very first line tells of the image the king made. And Nebuchadnezzar himself uses the same verb in verse 15. In fact, for an Israelite, Nebuchadnezzar's statement in that verse, now if you're ready to fall down and worship the image I have made, sums up the theological asininity of the whole affair. To worship what someone made? A reader almost ducks under the machine gun-like occurrences of the verb kum, set up. It appears 9 times, verse 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 12, 14, and 18. Always in reference to the image the king set up. Swipe the use of that word with your orange highlighter and then go back to the text and see if it doesn't seem as a kind of cumulative mockery is at work. The image is a setup job, as we say. The writer is telling you that it's no more divine than your knee replacement. The writer is probably mocking as well when he describes the pomp of the occasion. He seems to tell the story with such deliberate repetition, the extended lists of the brass that were attending, the fourfold itemizing of Nebuchadnezzar's orchestra. By the way he writes up the story, the writer turns pomp into pomposity and coats the dignity with derision. The occasion is clearly impressive, yet in the writer's hands, subversively ludicrous. I think he nails it. I think, as Daniel writes this up, he's just showing the whole sham of the whole ordeal. When Nebuchadnezzar was told of the disobedience of the three men, look at what happens. He's furious with rage. He commands them to be brought to him. So they brought the men before him, and he answered to him, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you're ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hand? His arrogance here is unrestrained. He even challenges any God out there. Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hand? Here's a man consumed with his own importance and his own power. I've read Daniel, I don't know how many times I've read this story, how many times I've probably preached on this before. And something I never picked up on before that came clear this time, I was always under the impression that they did play the music the second time and give them the chance. But they denied him right here and now, and they go immediately to the fire furnace. They never did the music the second time. So if you were caught in that same error I was, let me correct it for you. The music didn't play the second time. Well, what a bold response, though. Here is real faith. This trust in God that they have and his providence was amazing. Verse 16, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image you have set up. We pointed out in the sermon in chapter 1 that they do what they were required to do according to the law of God. They didn't try and start a movement. They weren't rude to the king. They didn't declare him to be an egomaniac, which he was. All they did was obey God in the first commandment. They knew they could worship only Yahweh and no others, so they were determined to obey and let the chips fall where they may. They had confidence that God would deliver them, but get it, it wasn't absolute confidence. The but if not of verse 18 demonstrates that. God is able, and he probably will, but if not, we're still not going to bow. Because they knew God was sovereign, and he alone chooses to deliver as he sees fit. So we need to take a stand for good and right. And maybe God will deliver us in a marvelous way, but maybe not. But we need to be ready to stand regardless of the consequences. Kids, let me talk to you. Over 200 years ago, when Andrew Jackson was president of the United States, now Jackson had been a general, tough guy. His nickname was Rough and Ready. Okay, so he wasn't some mousy little guy. He was a tough guy. Well, he decided one Sunday to go to the church that was pastored by a guy named Peter Cartwright. Well, the elders of the church discovered that he was coming, and they went to Cartwright and they said, now, president's coming on Sunday, so be very, very careful about what you say. Don't offend the president and all that kind of stuff. So on Sunday, Cartwright gets up. He said, I understand that President Andrew Jackson is here in the congregation today, and I've been warned to be very careful about what I say. So let me say this, that Andrew Jackson will go to hell unless he repents of his sin and believes in Jesus. And the people in the congregation, what did he just say? But after the service, Jackson went up to Cartwright and said, you know, if I had a whole regiment of men like you, I could conquer the world. He was pleased with his boldness. Whether he agreed with him or not, I don't know. But he liked that he was that bold. We too. Even when you're young. Matter of fact, now's the time to start. Don't be timid. Don't be afraid to stand up for Jesus. We need to always do it, but it's best to start when you're young. All right? Now, this response that the three men gave enraged Nebuchadnezzar. And isn't it true that in almost all of life, to defy the arrogant and the powerful is never safe? Especially when arrogance and power are united together, they can actually do something about their arrogance. So he lashes out against them in absolute fury. He commands the furnace to be heated 7 times hotter. They were bound, clothing and all, and thrown into the furnace. It was so hot that the ones who threw them in were killed by the heat. And verse 23 states it in plain language. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. There was no escape plan, no last-minute rescue. They were thrown in. Deliverance does come, however, in the person of a fourth man. Now, how soon he appeared, we're not told. It seems to me that it was virtually immediate. Had to be pretty quick. But Nebuchadnezzar can't believe his eyes. He inquires, didn't we put three guys in there? And that's confirmed. So he can't figure out how this fourth guy got there. And how was it even possible that the soldiers died that took him up to the furnace and now they weren't burned up? Humans can't live in that kind of heat. That he knew. But yet they were still alive and well, walking around in the furnace. He's perplexed also by the fourth man. He said he looks like a son of the gods. Well, there he was almost correct. Not the son of the gods, but rather the son of God. This certainly seems to be an appearance of what the Old Testament calls elsewhere the angel of Jehovah, or pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. But rather than delivering the men from the furnace, the son of God joins them in the furnace. And by his presence, they're saved from the flames. What a glorious picture of Christ in his redeeming work for us. He joins us here in the broken world. He endures hell for us that we deserved. As our substitute, he accomplishes our redemption. He endures the fire for us, but now promises to be with us in the fire to help us endure. There's a gospel group called the Crab Family. I think I may have quoted this once before, but I'm going to do it again because it fits so well with where we're going today. Southern gospel group, the Crab Family, sing a song entitled Through the Fire. It goes like this. So many times I question certain circumstances and things I could not understand. Many times in trials my weakness blurs my vision. That's when my frustration gets so out of hand. It's then I'm reminded I've never been forsaken. I've never had to stand one test alone. That's when I look at all the victories, the Spirit rising up in me, and it's through the fire my weakness is made strong. He never promised that the cross would not get heavy or the hill would not be hard to climb. He never offered victories without fighting, but he said help would always come in time. Just remember, when you're standing in the valley of decision and the adversary says, give in, just hold on. Our Lord will show up and he'll take you through the fire again. I know that within myself, I would surely perish. If I trust the mighty hand of God, he'll shield the flame again and again. He never promised that the cross would not get heavy and the hill would not be hard to climb. He never offered victories without fighting. He never said help would not come in time. Just remember, when you're standing in the valley of decision and the adversary says, give in, just hold on. Our Lord will show up and he'll take you through the fire again. So as we face the difficulties of life and resistance to our faith, we need to hold on. We need the confidence that the Lord will indeed show up and take us through the fire again. He may not do it as he did it for the three young men, but he will never abandon you. His love for you will not let you perish. We need the confidence that Job had when he said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Here's where we must find our confidence. Christ has already lived and died and risen again for us. Is he going to abandon us now just because life has gotten tough? Now, Nebuchadnezzar was astounded, and he calls for them to come out. He identifies them as servants of the Most High God. He knew who was behind this amazing stuff that he had just seen, that was totally baffling to him. The other officials crowd around him, and they too were amazed at what happened. Notice what it says. They saw the fire had not had any power over the bodies of these men. The hair of their heads was not singed. Their cloaks were not harmed. No smell of fire had come upon them. The furnace seven times hotter and no hair singed. I mean, you know how easy it is to pass your hand over the burner of the stove. You know, you hear that weird sound and you smell that. You know, it doesn't take much at all to singe your hair. Not a hair was singed. Truly amazing. No smell of smoke. Again, that's amazing. could only be the work of God protecting them from the power of Nebuchadnezzar. Remember what he said in his arrogance? And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hand? Well, he just had a head-on collision with Yahweh. Yahweh is the most high God of heaven and earth. And Nebuchadnezzar lost. He could indeed deliver out of his hand. And he did. In a magnificent way. So after that, he calls him out of the fire and says, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. Notice what he says. This arrogant guy that he was, he's praising God. Why? He set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship. He's praising God and them for disobeying him now. He says, no other God is able to rescue in this way. And they got promoted. But this is still not a clear confession of faith in Yahweh. There certainly is respect for him. He was not going to tolerate any trash talking of the God of the Jews. He was duly impressed with what he saw, and we can safely say that there was room now in his polytheistic pantheon for this Most High God. But this experience still didn't cure him of his arrogance completely. But you have to come back next week and hear about chapter 4, where it may have been cured finally then. Look at the nature of the threat against those who would speak against Yahweh. Torn limb from limb, houses turned to ruins. He was serious about this, serious threat. Now, this account is important for us because it demonstrates the value of standing for the only true God when worshiping other things is popular or even demanded. If you can't see a correlation with our own day, you're simply not looking. The easiest thing in the world would be to bow to the image. Who's really going to notice? Maybe it's a way to get ahead or to impress the right people. Why make waves? Why ruffle feathers? Just go along with it. You don't have to believe it. Just do it and be done with it. It's so easy to think and act that way rather than being principled individuals. Our calling is so different than that. Our calling is to live in the world but not be part of it. Christ lived and died and rose again to deliver us from the power of the world, the flesh, and the devil so that we might live to the glory of God. And we're not living up to his glory when we love the things and the systems of this world. So we need to give up on the world in that way and all of its stuff and trust in the mighty God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They knew their salvation was bound up with this God, and they intended to serve him regardless of the personal cost to them. Now, as it turned out in their situation, they were blessed for the stance they took. But first, they had to be willing to go into the fire. They, like we, are called to work within the system of this world. For them, it was working for the government of Nebuchadnezzar, the one who had exiled the Jews to Babylon. They were going to work for him, and they had to do their best. They were to work for him as they sought the glory of God. They had to work hard. They had to do their best. They must never sacrifice their commitment to God, however, for the sake of Nebuchadnezzar. And they just demonstrated that here, that they would not do that. So they did seek the glory of God in the service of Nebuchadnezzar. And that is what we are to do as well. Christ and his redeeming work must loom so large in our minds and in our hearts that we don't cave to the pressures of the world, all the while working hard to try and make the world around us a better place. There's no contradiction there. It's just what we're called to. We've been empowered by the Holy Spirit to do so. We don't have to cave in, even though perhaps you did in the past. Perhaps you caved in some way just this past week. So flee to Christ, hear his words of love and forgiveness for you, and re-embrace the full redemption that we have in his blood. He died for us because we do cave in. We cave into temptation and pressure. But those failures are forgiven by what Christ has done. So move on from those and then hear his call to serve him supremely, regardless of the cost. So their situation, extremely similar to ours. Maybe not so dramatic, but they knew that they stood by faith on what God has done, and that God was there with them in the midst of the fire to help them endure. That's our situation as well. Let's come and receive refreshment at his table.